Planet Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for at least the next hour on this December the 7th, Pearl Harbor Day, on the West Coast, and now December the 8th on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zones. We'd like to welcome all those listening around the world on Wind Talkers Radio Network and on BlogTalkRadio.com on the Internet. We'd like to welcome what I understand are 9 new stations that may very likely be carrying, or I should say possibly, carrying this show tonight in Australia. I had a wonderful 2 hours with Drew Raines on his A Marine's Disquisition earlier this evening, and it was the fastest 2 hours I think I've ever spent in my life. It seemed more like 15 minutes, and Drew said the same thing. We got into a really, really interesting and in-depth conversation about what's going on around the world and a little bit about some of the genealogical research I've been doing. I've got another piece on Dwight David Eisenhower coming out, and I'm sure you're going to find it fascinating. The truth is coming to us in buckets, and I guess I got a whole swimming pool full over this weekend. Lots going on today. We got a strange report somewhere around two-thirds or three-quarters of the way through the show that I was guesting on with Drew Raines this afternoon. We heard that 3 women in Quantico, Virginia, were shot and killed. And we have been talking about the international crackdown, we'll say, on this U.S. financial corruption in the Federal Reserve, the U.S. Treasury, Washington, and the banks and brokerage firms in New York City. And I did get confirmation that Christopher Story's most recent article is very accurate. There were 8 plane loads of people sent into the country, and more recently, the 8th plane was an army of Interpol agents assisting in releasing and delivering the Nasara funds. So that is underway. That is a true story. And as we move along, we'll update you when we find out more information. In the meantime, the nice guest is a talk show host in his own right. He's an author, a researcher, an incredible journalist, and I have to say an incredible author. And yet, what he writes is very credible. he's a naturopathic doctor and certainly an expert on a number of different issues. And we're going to talk about many things tonight. We welcome back our Monday night guest for the whole month of December, Dr. A. Truat. True, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much. It's a pleasure, Don, to be on your show. And I didn't catch what you said there in your report. Delivering what?
The Nasara funds. These are the prosperity funds that have been invested over a period of 20 to 30 years. Some are farm funds. Some are called the Freedom or the Prosperity funds. And these have been hijacked by the central bankers, the Federal Reserve, and the U.S. Treasury. This is to bring about massive wealth, debt forgiveness, and the reinstitution of humanitarian projects throughout the world, especially in the United States. But this is something that's going to take place worldwide. And this corrupt cabal in Washington has been trying to thwart that. We've endured this over. Now we're into our 4th presidency of this. This started with George H. Scherf, Jr., and it's continued all the way through Barry Rockefeller. Okay. So I hope that sort of clarifies it.
So the Interpol agents were I'm not sure of the connection there with why they were involved in it.
They're involved because the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund, and we're not talking about the Washington division of that those organizations, are tired of pussyfooting around and watching our leaders here in the United States violate Basel II and Basel III. We have been on a gold standard now, I understand, at least the past 2 years. In fact, this is about the time, okay? So it's 2 years ago we should have been on a gold standard here, and they have been literally hijacking all the public funds and privatizing them, collateralizing them with our money, and then turning around and stealing it all, putting it in offshore accounts, and they're getting caught. Basel II agreements specify proof of source of funds, and they cannot do that without admitting that they've stolen the funds. So, you know, they're really in a backed into a corner. They painted themselves into a corner, we could say.
Well, when you say funds, are we talking Federal Reserve notes or computer entries or hard gold and silver?
These are funds backed by gold and silver, okay? The rest of the world is on a gold standard right now. We don't hear about that in our media, do we?
Nope.
So that in essence is what it's about. Now, many people invested into these programs years ago, and they were promised a return. And this is being backed by several high-powered groups around the planet.
Huh.
Okay, so
well,
it's true. I've been talking about it, and it's coming to pass. You know, the media is now using the word trillions. You know, when I started using it, everybody said I was crazy. But now it's just bantied about like it's nothing.
Well, there's you know, it's not too many places on this globe to hide anymore. I mean, where are they going to take it, to Mars?
Well, that's actually probably part of what they're doing.
Could be.
Airway.
Golly. Yeah, we had a lengthy phone conversation this evening with our friend Ken Adachi concerning something that he had posted on his website back in 2005. It was kind of an expose on this, well, not so much an expose, but just wondering about this Sorcha Fowl group or individual, whatever you want to call it, that had posted this continuous doom and gloom papers. But the one that really that he had posted and commented on was really stunning. Because in 2005, they basically said there would be a weaponized H1N1 influenza that would be released on the world. But they made it sound like it was happening in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
And I pointed that out to Ken, and I reminded him of the context and the content of that piece. And it was like something that you or I would write today describing what's happened now.
Mm-hmm.
So to have these things, we kind of broached the subject today on Jeff Rentz's show, and Jeff most definitely didn't want to go there.
I noticed that. I got to hear about half of it. My phone was ringing off the hook this evening, but... Yes, I noticed that. He sort of didn't want to go there. That's the best way to describe it.
Yeah, it was. I think it's important to notice that for some whatever reason, this does seem to be a cabal that is centered in Jerusalem and into Russia. It's most assuredly, of the Jewish persuasion. Given the names and factions involved, and why that was a subject that was, you know, he deemed to be taboo at the time. He definitely wanted to talk about it privately. it was a raw nerve there for some reason, obviously.
Yeah. I like the way you described Dr. Nyman, our mutual friend.
Mm-hmm. Well, that was, in that paper, yeah. It listed a report by Nyman then of the listing of the gene clades back in 2005 for this novel H1N1 biological weapon that would be released. And so there's his name prominently portrayed again. Again, there's some strange things, I got to tell you, happening between Nyman and Rima Labow. Here's this, they have the Sorcha Fowl organization has published two books that are quite voluminous, 480-something pages each one, and basically telling people how to survive the coming apocalyptic events. And these books aren't just printed willy-nilly this year. It's quite a detailed progression. And looking at what these books are advocating as far as, you know, open rebellion, even guerrilla war tactics, it's amazingly the same language as our Austrian journalist Jane Burgermeister said in reports advocating action against the forces that were practicing their games with the Homeland Security this summer. We find also that the same themes are echoed by Rima Labow, basically, to leave the country, to get out of America. Here's this sisterhood of Sorcha Fowl, according to some reports, 18 different monasteries with their adherents, their sisters, right? Worldwide.
They specialize in intelligence, by the way, not the Bible or not.
Oh, yeah. And so, you know, the reports that come out, like Drew said on his show last week, they're laughable at when they first come out, but then you look at them, like I'm talking about this, the Ken Adachi piece, 4 years later, and it's eerie. It's flat out eerie how it's happened. Mm-hmm. And I could go on and on with other examples. So, is it misinformation or just information of a coded nature that will happen in the future? That's kind of the question mark. And no one person. I try to get this through to Jeff, but no one person really can have all these streams of information from different parts of the globe.
No, it's an intelligence operation. There is no doubt about it, and it's got connections to Britain and the CIA. You can say MI6 is involved, and it's got that. I think it's a GRB connection, actually, not necessarily KGB. The higher intelligence agencies over there in Russia, the one that Putin secretly runs. And you know, that's not my expertise, but I keep coming across the same things from these people. I had mentioned to you on a previous show, I can't even remember whose show it was now, if it was yours, mine, Drew's. I had been doing some research a couple of years ago on David Booth, and Rebecca Booth is the name that comes up when you do a person search.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, D and R are quite a distance away in the alphabet. And it's not like the database misunderstood what I was saying. It knew exactly what I was looking for, and it brought up Rebecca Booth. And you made the reference from your research to Rebecca from the Bible, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So this is code language being used here, no doubt. And I guess I could I could call my readers my Eastern subscribers, couldn't I? To counterbalance that, the claim of her Western subscribers, you know.
Well, there's no doubt that there's quite a large volume of interest of people that receive her updates, or I should say, the organization's updates.
Yeah.
And so it's just, you know, I just see the similarities between Rima Laibow and Burgermeister for two. What they're advocating, that is just right down the sisterhood line. For whether it's coincidence or not, I leave that up to the individual. But
if you listen to my show, if you listen to your show, or one listens to your show, you listen to Drew's show, and a few other shows that are bringing out in truckloads the truth, you'll see one of these Sor Shafal articles come out. And they'll really, really hit the email. They're sent through emails. And, of course, you know, does anyone subscribe to this stuff? You know, it's doublespeak. The language is, you know, disinformation in terms of who it is and who this person is. It's actually a group. It's not one person.
Yep.
And that's the thing people have to understand.
Well, I thought it was singular, you know. I've discussed many topics with Mr. Rents, with Jeff, and it's always, you know, he's seems to be very open-minded. I've heard him say so many times, well, anything's possible, true, you know. And to that end, that's a very healthy journalistic viewpoint. But, boy, this case closed that Sor Shafal is nothing but a fraud, with him. And that's, I thought that was kind of unusual, given that, yeah, there's quite a bit of evidence to prove, at least in my mind, that it is not a singular Sor Shafal, but a number of sisters doing the job here. Anyway, why is that important?
The sisters could be men, you know. I mean, let's think outside the box.
Yeah. The cabal, the Kabbalah, the power of the Lilith sisters in Judaism should never be overlooked, and I didn't have time to get it, because the subject was changed today, and Jeff pointed it back to the swine flu thing, but when you think about it, the most powerful figure in the Talmud, the Talmudic text, and is the feminine figure of Lilith, why is there no open Jewish organization, you know, for the Mother Goddess? Well, I submit that this is that organization. It's just not well known. Doesn't mean that it doesn't exist, but it's definitely an organization that needs to be not discounted or poo-pooed away as just a crazy crackpot man named David Booth, but needs to be analyzed for what it is.
Yes. I agree. Speaking of the H1N1, and I've not been talking about it very much lately because it's died down in a sense, and yet what you're seeing in mainstream now, two days ago I saw a Clorox bleach commercial where they were telling everybody to kill the H1N1 germ, use Clorox bleach, and they're telling you how to wash your hands with it and wipe down your countertops and things like that. And then they recommend getting the vaccine at the end of the commercial. I mean, what have, you know, now we've got chemical companies are now allowed to practice medicine. What is going on?
Well, I said on the show today with Rents, it's, you know, I think they're doing their job very well as far as, you know, this vaccine, in my opinion, after review, it's primarily designed to be a sterilization tool.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I remind the listeners that, George Soros and his billionaires club, and they're meeting this last spring in May, they basically came out and prescribed a very strong plan of action to drastically reduce the world's population. It's as we know, we have the Copenhagen discussions going on, the cap and trade plan. Again, it's just, if you listen to the mainstream news today in Copenhagen, they gave new scientific evidence that global warming is very detrimental to human health. What is that? I thought getting some sun rays and being in a warm climate is promoting health.
Well, thank God for global warming. We had snow today, so it's just preposterous. I mean, it's gotten so ridiculous. We can certainly harp on that if you choose to, but there are other things going on. By the way, I sent you an email you might want to look for in your upper echelon email. I think you'll find it quite fascinating what shows up sometimes. I have been down the rabbit hole, and I have discovered some things that are going to tie into some of the comments you made. You were talking about Austria and that region of the world. You know, we had Leo Wanta, Ambassador Leo Wanta, attempting to funnel trillions of dollars into Austria. We have in the region of the old, in fact, I mentioned this on Drew's show last Thursday. If you remember, I called in and you and Drew graciously welcomed me to be a second guest on the show. And I was sharing this recent research. I was very excited about it and still am, because I have I can stand on what I brought to that show last Thursday on solid ground, and tell you that I have gone down the rabbit hole on Dwight D. Eisenhower, and I have determined who the father is, the bloodline, we'll say, and just a lot of the current events going on today in the Ukraine and Romania have everything to do with some of the comments you made and what I shared on that show. Mm-hmm. That article is about three quarters of the way finished, and it's going to be quite a revelation to a lot of people. It's amazing. This thing that we're going through right now with the long-legged Mac Daddy is not unique. It's happened many times in our country's history. So you will find it fascinating.
Well, it's like Jeff Rentz would say, anything's possible, and nothing seems to surprise me anymore. When you talk about the highest office in the land, I say it's very important for them to have the puppet strings as invisible as possible, but still make it real. So yeah, just the birth dates and places of Eisenhower, it's not just a happenstance, a clerical error. I think you're right on with that.
I am more right on than you can imagine, and I have pictures to go along with documented proof. So,
like one listener would ask, though, what's the relevance today? Well, again, it just shows a pattern.
It shows a long range plan too, if I might say. Okay, and it ties in exactly with what's going on today. But go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't.
I'm just thinking, like we talked about on Drew Rain's show, the story of General Patton and what he had uncovered as far as the so-called Jewish cabal conspiracy, basically to enslave the world. He saw it firsthand there with the Bolshevik Red Army that were, you know, was jockeying for position there in Europe. His memoirs and his letters to his wife, at least you know, that was published in the book on Patton, showed that he was ready to blow the whistle on Dwight David Eisenhower's collusion with these Bolshevik powers that be in Russia. Okay.
Yes. Yes. And that ties in very closely with my research.
Yeah. So there you go. They had to silence Patton, and of course the book I was talking to you about earlier most definitely shows strong evidence that he was in fact murdered by certain powerful Bolshevik interests, and not the least of which is Stalin himself.
Mm-hmm. And I find it interesting that somebody who graduated in the top 50% of his class, usually that means you're just above 50%.
Right.
Right?
It's a nice, tactful way of saying that. Yeah.
You know, it sounds like, oh, yeah, he must be really smart. Well, he's as smart as half of the people, or he's right in the middle of the smart ones and the not-so-smart ones. But that someone would, you know, they made him into this war hero, but my estimation of that, on the basis of what I've discovered, is that that was all smoke and mirrors. That was all propaganda, just to move him into the office. I mean, he basically started his campaign in the middle of 1952, and you know, by the election in November, had won.
Mm-hmm.
That's presuming that there wasn't vote fraud, but you know, regardless, he was the chosen man. And what is significant is who he is related to. That is what is significant. And I can tell you, he's not related to anybody in this country in terms of his genealogy.
Well, it's obviously the Hauer, H-A-E-U-R, not H-O-W-E-R, is either Austrian or German.
Yes. Yes. Well, the claim was that the roots were German, and that was, you might as well say Kenyan there, okay, or Hawaiian.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Kenyan would probably be more appropriate, actually. But I just thought I would share that. I've been working nonstop for 3 days straight on this research, and I've got everything I need, everything to present the facts and the evidence and draw some conclusions and let people determine what they're going to do. But I can tell you, without a doubt, it has everything to do with what's going on today.
Well, I don't know what his aunt, you know, his daughters and granddaughters and his grandsons are going to say about it, but it's all, you know, there is... a need for truth to come out and be exposed. It ties into what you've already proven about B.O. in the White House and why there is no certificate of live birth to be presented. That's a very important piece of the puzzle as well, I must say, too.
Yeah. Well, you know, the significance of all this are the laws that were created under his administration, okay, and we're talking about administrative law. We're not talking about constitutional law, and we're talking about administrative law conducted upon the people of this country, of this constitutional republic, by a foreigner who was never even naturalized, you see, and lied about where he was from. As early as 1924, that's the earliest record I've been able to find right now, but I'm sure there were others out there. And there is a tremendous amount of obfuscation involved in covering that up. In fact, the biographies serve that purpose, and the database entries serve that purpose. And they always do. I'm beginning to see they always do that. That's the intention, putting these stories out. I chose one in particular that is, it's bordering upon ridiculous because of the intimacy of the details that are disclosed. And it certainly casts a dark shadow on all the other research that has come out, valid or not, just because of the nature of who purportedly brought this research forward, and the anomalies that occur in the message. In fact, it provided me with a few clues, and you know, sometimes you hear the most ridiculous thing, but then you say, wait a minute, let me look at this, and has nothing to do with what the person said, but they sort of stimulated or sparked that interest in a particular area, and you eventually solve the puzzle when you're thinking about it least, or working on it with the least amount of effort.
Right, but we need to also just make people aware that really was under the Eisenhower administration, following, of course, the Harry S. Truman debacle, was when Dulles and the CIA really began to get their foothold, and look what's happening now today in 2009. With these out of control military industrialist complex organizations that happened on his watch. Whatever you may think to the contrary, you know, CIA really got its foothold thanks to Ike. And golly, you know, he had written so many times about the importance of good intelligence. Good spy networks and how important that is. And you go back to the so-called secret treaty of Fort Hunt, in Virginia. You know, I understand, Don, that you can actually take a tour. Well, if you go into the either military intelligence, as a career, or heaven forbid, you are employed by the CIA, it's my understanding that they give a tour of the greater Washington area and show the points of interest of the evolution of the intelligence agencies. And one of the areas of interest on this tour is the Fort Hunt region there, where these, you know, the CIA basically was born. And it's important to tie this in. Now we're talking about the Eisenhower as the German connection. The fact remains with the expose on the Fort Hunt Treaty was that the Gestapo, basically the secret police of the Nazi realm, had a vast, decades-long buildup of a very sophisticated spy network. The secret police had their agents infiltrated deep into just about every nation in Eastern Europe, and most assuredly the Soviets. Okay, during the time when Hitler and Stalin and were actually allies, right? Well, it was just a matter of building, fleshing out their intelligence network. So here you have the media hyping the Soviet Union and scourge against humanity and the very, you know, the evils of this police state of Stalin and Lenin and Mao, and it was being this terrible, terrible a scourge on the earth. Well, it appears all the while that the deal is an unholy alliance made with the Nazi German Gestapo to transfer these assets, this personnel, and streamline them into the the newly formed CIA. Well, either Dwight David Eisenhower was blissfully ignorant and a complete and total stooge, or he was complicit in this whole operation.
Yeah, I would say he was complicit on the basis of what I know. And I would refer, the claim is that there's a German connection. However, I would say make that Zionist or Ashkenazi.
Right.
Okay. There is a difference, and that will become clear when you're able to read my research. That's for the listeners too.
Well, you know what I was able to find out too concerning the Rockefeller family. They began the family tree goes back to the same region, the Hammersburg area, and they were active. The family was actually in Germany. It were not the Rockefellers. They were. Their family name was Rogenfeder, and they were rabid proponents of the Jewish return to Palestine, the so-called Zionist movement. Now, if you understand the family history, back in 1819, there was a huge conference of European Jews there in Hamburg, Germany, and the primary point of discussion for this conference was to have both sides present the case pro and con for the Zionist movement, the establishment of the Israeli homeland, the Jewish homeland in Jerusalem and Palestine. Well, as the history shows, if you really dig deep into this, the vote was taken, the vast majority of Khazarian Jews were, which are today, again, 80% of Jewry, said no, this is not our ancestral homeland whatsoever, and we want to strike any mention of return to Jerusalem from the prayer books. The rabbis will not talk about it. It was basically voted as a not a direction the Jews wanted to go at the time. Now, this was quite a convincing vote in favor of striking the Zionist movement from the prayer books. And the leaders of this pro-Zionist camp, one of the top fighting families was Rogenfeder, Wild Bill's father actually emigrated after this vote in the 1820s and established themselves in upstate New York and changed their name to Rockefeller. Well, it appears like that's the connection link as well to what's going on with the research with Dwight David.
Mm-hmm. I'm not going to go into detail, but I read the most ridiculous biography I think I've ever read, trying to cover the tracks on this the president that we had, the 34th president, and just the fast track to the office should raise suspicion, but everyone was in this big state of ecstasy because the war was over, and when you consider how many lives were lost, and at least they told us, World War One was the end of the war to end all wars, but that turned out not to be true, and we found out that even World War Two wasn't the war to end all wars; it was the war to basically practice getting the whole world involved in places they didn't belong. Vietnam, Korea, Argentina, and then all over the Middle East. I mean, that's been going on for thousands of years. Mm-hmm. That is the true spiritual warfare that's been going on there. And, there's a portal, generally speaking, over the Middle East about 1,000 miles wide for interdimensional travel. So you can imagine why that's a hotbed of activity and why it's so barren. It's endured thousands of years of war.
Hmm. Yeah, it's a gateway. It's a like the Baltic states as a whole, it's a key part of who controls that part of the world, controls much of Europe eventually. And that's, again, why the Khazarian people, for the most part, accept, you know, embraced Judaism. They were trying to basically, you know, be neutral in all the affairs, and because of you know, from the days of the Crusades, that whole area was you know, basically a fight between Muslims and the Christians, and the Jewish question seemed to be a good place to be in the middle, right down the middle of the road. That's why so many Khazarians basically embraced the religion and called themselves the Blood of Israel. But that is really not what happened whatsoever.
Yes, yes, and most of our listeners know that. Now, we had a call, actually a message that we got from Rodney, who calls into the show once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And he asked if I or you have heard anything about Kuwait pulling their money out of Citicorp. Now, that pretends possibly a planned attack on Iran, I would think. They brought the Shah down when the Rockefellers didn't want to pay them their due pertaining to all of the oil transactions that had occurred. And so they just removed the Shah. You know, that whole episode that took place in the 80s had to do with oil and money, like it does today. I mean, it never changes. Always follow the money.
Yeah, and follow the natural resources. You know, if we just look at this so-called troop surge, they just had the local news here. I was just watching it at the late news just before the show. I was just stunned to, you know, I hear they're having all this, the Utah troops are being called forth and getting their instructions by the powers that be, the, you know, the commanders, and they're preparing for a major engagement there with many hundreds of dead. This is something that's so far removed from precision attack in caves to find, you know, to extract the supposed Osama bin Laden terrorist, okay? Can't you see how the evolution of this is proving, again, that this 9/11 was an inside job to begin with?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, the media, we hear these stories that the mainstream media is being warned, although several journalists allegedly have attempted to sort of take the side of the alternative media. I guess, you know, when we hammer on them like they've been hammering on us, it gets to them after a while. They realize that they're being traitors to their nation.
Uh-huh.
And they're forbidden. I mean, these are forbidden topics on TV shows. If they discuss it at all on mainstream AM or FM radio on the run of the mill clear channel style shows or programs, because they're programming, they're not showing anything but the program. They're told, you know, it's off limits. Don't talk about it.
And of course, we have to also mention that when the Soviet Union did their supposed disintegration, that the republics of Uzbekistan, the Kyrgyzstan, and of course they all basically have now regimes that are very, very, very pro U.S. With the exception of the Taliban and the Afghan people. Well, now we see that the key to the control of that whole region lies in this troop surge. Again, for what purpose? Well, we just have got the understanding that there's a vast reservoir of raw crude oil there. Then some reports that it even rivals all of the Middle Eastern oil. It's that big of a find. Not mentioning the great wealth of precious metals, gold, silver, copper, platinum that are there in those mountains in that region of the world.
Or ancient technologies.
That too, yeah.
Speaking of that region, actually it's a little bit further to the east, there was an announcement today that they've arrested a man in New York who is responsible for the attack on Mumbai. Another farce. This man or whoever was behind the attack, and I think most of researchers that know what's going on have determined that the Israeli Mossad was behind that whole thing. They were allowing the Jewish occupants of the hotel to escape, and those were the ones that were interviewed too about their great ordeal. And don't you find it a bit ridiculous? They certainly know who's behind it, and that they always have this patsy that they find. Certainly a man in New York did not do this, unless his name is Henry Kissinger.
Right. And I think the general public has short memories about the whole initial purpose of going into Afghanistan to begin with. And there was such an easy takeover, basically, of the country, with the Taliban being removed by the so-called Northern Alliance. You remember all of that hoopla that if you go back to the news reports in October, November of 2001, it was a shock and awe campaign in Afghanistan, and Taliban was replaced by the Northern Alliance, so-called. But what happened to the Northern Alliance? Where have they gone?
You brought up a very valid and interesting point, because I went back and reviewed some video from 9/11, and on the NBC Nightly News, the night of 9/11, 2001, Tom Brokaw, about two-thirds of the way through the show, started talking about Afghanistan, and they showed us this picture of this orange sky. A big bomb had gone off on the top of a mountain, and it looked very, very planned. I mean, how they capture this, how the camera was just sitting there waiting to capture this, no one thinks. But it was far enough away to get this image of this huge orange explosion being set off in the night sky, and it was referenced as having occurred in Afghanistan the night of 9/11.
Wow.
Okay, and that that is a YouTube video posted, NBC Nightly News, 9/11, 2001.
Wow. So there you go. I mean, it's just an amazing synchronicity, okay, that of all the places to hole up, why these caves. And I don't know if you've had much chance to review that published these books on the Nephilim stories of these
giants. Zechariah Sitchin?
No, it's Steve Quayle.
I'm sort of familiar with this stuff. I have reserved most of my opinions.
I hear you. But this book is supposedly from actual servicemen who they found this giant, huge individual that was unique in the fact that while he was humanoid in every other way, he had the six fingers on each hand and six toes. The speculation, or the good book by Steve Quayle, put out that this was the Nephilim of the giant race that basically was been kept into the, you know, in these subterranean chambers throughout this lower region of the world, of the Himalayan range, right? And the story was quite fascinating. The book, as I got and read it, had some very, very interesting things as far as the end times, the return of the Nephilim, the return of these giant horde. Now, while you visited me here in Utah, we didn't have a chance to go and take a look at some very interesting petroglyphs on the rock in the main canyon there by Vernal, Utah. Okay, there's an incredible panel of, and this is huge petroglyphs on this canyon wall. These petroglyphs are probably about 9 or 10 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
But they depict a king and a queen figure. They had this crown and huge amounts of breastplate. It's a well-done petroglyph panel depicting high jewelry, a crown, similar attire as you would see, in the Eastern cultures.
Oh, yes. I've seen similar things in my long-legged Mac Daddy research in Indonesia, using Google Earth in the mountain ranges there.
Well, the key thing I was wanted to tell you, these giant figures are humanoid in every way except for the six fingers and six toes.
Well, reptilians have six fingers.
Okay.
And I presume they have six toes. Now, this story about the Nephilim, if you're going to talk about the Nephilim, then you have to, the Nephilim are not necessarily the Anunnaki, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Although I've heard many people mix the two together or co-mingle the two together as if they were one and the same. There were accounts of the Anunnaki being anywhere from 30 to 40 feet tall. Who was the giant in the story of David and Goliath?
Mm-hmm. Well, Goliath was part of that bloodline, evidently. And again, this book that I did get was quite amazing in the fact that these giants are being held in these caves in a state of suspended animation by technology that borders on the black magic, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And how much of that was accurate and how much was literary license, hard to say, but there were artist renditions of an actual giant that was kept in a net with these shackles on its feet. It was in a state of animation, but yet appeared to be very lifelike and real and massive. It filled up pretty much the entire cargo bay of a C-130 transport
mm-hmm.
plane. Yeah.
Well, speaking about the Nephilim and the Anunnaki and Nibiru, Nibiru, depending on how you want to pronounce it, or Nibiru, I would say with 100% conviction that is not a planet they're talking about, number one. Planets are not rogue celestial bodies that just sort of move around wherever they choose. They don't have a will of their own. And to suggest that somehow this planet moves through space over a 3,600-year cycle and hangs around the Earth 200 of those years while it's passing is preposterous. It really is. And that it would select the Earth to be, the impediment in its way. If there is any truth to the story about that race of people, it would likely be a very large ship. And, lit up and parked out in the night sky, anyone could consider a ship angled to look like it's a planet, can sit on its edge like a plate and not affect those that are in it, because it's all an issue of perspective.
And it goes back to the some of the mystery school teachings with Nibiru. You've got the Disney studios. Remember the movie? Did you ever see that? Bedknobs and Broomsticks back, I think it was in the 70s and that debuted. But it was about, finding these, the secret, transportation portals to go to this mythical state called Nibiru. And where basically animals rule, not humans, see.
Well, isn't that the way it is on Earth?
Well, under their model, they would like to see that.
Yeah. Little political jab there. there are lots of stories of insectoid races, and I suppose if you can put intelligence and consciousness into matter, it can take on any form, because we might find a particular appearance to be detestable because of conditioning and fear mongering. Doesn't mean that someone that looks like an insect is necessarily evil, but that just because you like nature doesn't make those people or those individuals peaceful either.
Right, right.
It's a question of seeing them, learning about them, and learning the truth. Obviously, if the first thing out of their mouth is where's the kitchen? Time to run.
What's for
dinner?
Yeah, you're invited. You're going to be the main course, not to partake in the main course. Yeah, yeah. That's it's all very, very interesting. I got to tell you another little instance, because of course that's this panel of rock art depicting these six-toed and six-handed or six-fingered individuals compared quite amazingly to a discovery made in southern Utah, again during the latter part of the 60s. Now, there's a little-known fact about that area than the Red Rock Cliffs of southern Utah, right from Lake Powell, an area called the Johnson Canyon. There is in the late 1930s, and this was, of course, a couple of years before Pearl Harbor, there was a group of Nazis that came and set up a base camp there in the wilds of southern Utah. And it was well documented that they had this ham radio, this shortwave radio, were making broadcasts in German, picked up and then basically relayed back to, Berlin. The question, this has been an enigma, because many of the locals, including my family, my uncles at the time and my cousins knew full well what was happening there. It was quite a jab in the face of national security, so to speak. What were these German Nazi spies doing in southern Utah? Or more importantly, what the heck were they looking for?
Well, they were here a lot earlier than that, and I don't. That comment's not intended to demean in any way what you just said. in my deathbed confessions, photos, support claims that George H. Scherf Jr. was the 41st U.S. president, I did a section. The first part of the article was on how the Federal Reserve agents and bankers snuck into the country. And these became the major central banks and brokerage firms in New York City. And I did then a section on Circuit Chautauqua. And I came upon Circuit Chautauqua by following an intuitive hunch on an alias for Otto Skorzeny as a child, actually, being brought into this country. He was prepared for his role in the SS and beside Adolf Hitler, and then subsequently with George Scherf in establishing the CIA here in the United States. And he didn't die in, despite what people send in emails and put on blog posts, didn't die of cancer in 1975 in Madrid, Spain. He died in Boynton Beach, Florida on December 31st, 1999. Now, when I found the Circuit Chautauqua entry into an Ameritech competition. Now, who was Ameritech? This is one of Bush's offshoot, or I should say Scherf's offshoot companies, from the stolen Wantagate money. Ameritech was the phone company, and I think they were trying to get in cable. It was the worst phone company ever, I think, in this country, and it crashed big time. They were running it out of Michigan, and I was actually offered a job with this company, and of course I didn't accept it. But they sponsored this historical contest. In other words, you pick a topic and you do the research and you present all this information. And one of the finalists was the University of Iowa. They had done a story on Circuit Chautauqua, and they had been given the card files for this. Now, this is purported to be a sort of a traveling tent revival type of event, leaning towards promoting social values amongst the people, educating the people, exposing them to art, and literature, and oratory, and theater, and music, and it smacked of a German intelligence operation. And sometime after I had written that article, which came out in April of 2007, and ran for several months because it was so huge, couldn't fit it all in the paper, so we were taking up like 4 pages of the Idaho Observer at a time. Really, like a third of the paper was devoted to those articles for several months. The card files, they had a list of all the people that played a role in this, and I had basically been searching for two names that I had intuited, and they were in that file. Those two names and then I began doing research. And I found that these two people came in to the country at the age of 2 and 3. And they were brother and sister working together. And I am convinced that that was Otto Skorzeny. Mm. And then later on, of course, he came in and they gave him a different name. But in the card file were two really interesting names. And you had already mentioned one of these people. I think you were referring, though, to Alan Dulles. His brother, John Foster Dulles, was one of the participants in that. And another one was Randolph Churchill, the father of Winston Churchill. It's interesting that these characters ended up being central in my research in exposing the Scherf family, who are not the Bushes, but are German Nazis. And then John Foster Dulles says Alan Dulles was a CIA director.
Yes, indeed. And the rest is history.
Yes. So we have, you see, it's important to bring this up in that we can see how this was put together and who's behind it, because we're seeing the after effects of not doing anything about it when it occurred. And this was really a social engineering program. As they toured around the country, they were able to connect with all of the transplants or the infiltrators that they had sent here to the United States under the guise of chasing after the American dream.
Hmm.
And so they ran this out of Chautauqua, New York, originally, and then like a tent revival or a circus, they traveled around. They actually set up these huge tents, and they had a big caravan of vehicles. All these different, you know, thousands of performers participated in this. And it started in the late 1800s, and ran up, I think, just before the onset of World War II.
Wow.
So yes, we were infiltrated, definitely.
Well, you know, the camp of these Nazis was just eventually abandoned. It's a big mystery why they would leave their radios, their writing materials, just like here today, gone tomorrow, like they were just lifted off the planet and left all their possessions. This is a bizarre story. They were never heard from or seen again, though the camp, just a decade or so ago, I was there. It's a remote, I mean, we're talking back in the 30s, Don, as far out in the boonies as you could imagine, in some pretty doggone rough country. Now, there in the same canyon complex, some very weird discoveries were made. Imagine a white sandstone bluff about 800 feet high from the valley floor, and kind of has about a 400 yard width on this bluff. And my uncle and my father actually had cattle. A cattle lease, you know, BLM, animal unit monthly lease arrangement in this whole land area, which is, of course, BLM grazing permits. Well, they would, I remember as a young boy riding with my uncle and playing cowboy, and which I grew up much of the time doing in the summers, especially there. Getting a little geology lesson, how, you know, this basalt plugs would appear to be so out of place on this sandstone escarpment, this sandstone bluff. And the story I was told was, you know, this had to be blown in the air as volcanic bombs, you know, many, many miles away, the basalt of extinct volcanoes of the mountain range, many, many miles to the west of this property. Well, long story short, Don, these plugs were not volcanic bombs whatsoever. During the late 60s and early 70s, some very interesting things were discovered. I guess one of the these basalt stones had cracked and weathered so much over the years that it looked to be kind of indented into the sandstone itself. So the rancher that found it basically got a crowbar, and basically began to work and found out that this basalt was carved to fit another carved opening in the sandstone, much like you would see a cork fitting to a bottle. And when they pulled out these, opened up these drilled, there was actually bodies entombed in these very, very strange mausoleums. Imagine a solid rock, a drill, a bore, a full 5 to 6 feet in diameter, descending down about 12 feet into the sandstone, and then being capped by a totally non-indigenous basalt plug. Well, the Smithsonian was involved. The artifacts were basically cataloged and spirited away, and then the whole sandstone area was blocked, drilled, and blown to hide the technology that was needed. It was just far beyond even what we could do today with our modern technology. And I say this because there was in the valley there, this Johnson Canyon region, another really weird discovery: a huge skull and the human bones was found. The skull was massive, a good 4 foot wide, and just incredibly large human skull with some very strange things. There were two rows of teeth in the skull, and this is quite well documented by the news reports. But all this giant skeleton was again spirited away to some area, something tied to the Smithsonian in Washington D.C.
But now it sounds like the occupation of the day would have been, or the preferred occupation would have been, a dentist.
Right. But see, that goes back to the story by Steve Quill on the Nephilim, or the Anunnaki, whatever you want to call them. This description of this being in this suspended animation state. The description was, again, six toes and six fingers on the hands, but two rows of teeth. I just find that to be very, very amazingly similar. And this was supposedly brought out from an underground cave in Afghanistan, for heaven's sakes.
What kind of what would such an individual use for a toothbrush, do you think?
Probably use a human thigh bone that's sharpened to pick its teeth, I guess.
Oh, my goodness. Oh. Where's Idi Amin when you need him?
Well, just think of these cave structures there in Afghanistan. Some very, very weird anomalies, again, involving such things as Mothman entities, gigantic creatures of some sort. There was a report of an exploratory group of Marines that went into these caves and were all slaughtered. That was on a mainstream news channel, re-depicting that, and they basically bombed, blew up the cave entrance and sealed it off. But see, what's behind this troop search by BO? What's really going on to justify it? I think there's...
We have visitors.
There could be some really strange happenings going on there that are above top secret.
Yeah, we have visitors, and we've had them for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And I've been saying this. I've said this on a number of my shows, and certainly when you've been on with me, we've talked about this on a few occasions. There are visitors. That is a hotbed of activity. But you even have to go further east into Southeast Asia. It's more, even more active. The things that are going on there are atrocious. Mm. And And some of the reports that are coming out of there from, no pun intended, from the underground, are mind-boggling. Do you think possibly that the disappearance of the Germans in, or you're speaking about Nazis, I would presume, they would have possibly built an underground base in that area? You think that's why they're not seen now?
Well, again, we're talking, there were just two of them. It wasn't a large group, they had support as they came in, but just to stay there, there was just the two of them. Maybe at the very end, just a single Nazi was doing his work. I just think back to the Spielberg movie on the Raiders of the Lost Ark, where he makes it seems to be like the Indiana Jones character is fictionalized, but there was with Madame Blavatsky and some of the mystery schools being a very strong influence on Hitler and the Nazi Party. Had access to many things from the Himalayan region, and pointing out other corresponding secret caves and caverns throughout the world. And I really believe, again, it's just nothing more than intuition at this point, that there was something that directed them to try and find an archaeological artifact that was referenced in some of these ancient texts, and being the world travelers that the Chinese, the Himalayan regions were, could very likely have had correspondence or something to do with the individuals anciently there in the Johnson Canyon region. Again, yeah. The parallels between the steppes of the Himalayas, the Afghan region, and these caves just are strikingly, eerily the same as the stories I knew as a young man. Were nothing but nonfiction, absolutely true.
Well, you know, when we consider what they're doing in space, the world governments that have sort of partnered, you know, their activities, and I'm not necessarily speaking about the International Space Station, but you know, they're up there manufacturing things that have to be manufactured in zero gravity. So they got that information from someone that had that information. When you look at all the satellites, there are thousands of satellites up in space. People who watch TV and subscribe to satellite television think that there's three or four, maybe five or six satellites up there, and they die out after a certain period of time. Or they're not really dying out. They've surpassed their usefulness. And at that point, they just decide to take them out and bring on some new ones. Many of them are being used as weapons, and I'm sure that they're doing a lot of electromagnetic and radiometric readings of certain areas of the Earth, looking for treasure, looking for gold or oil or in the case of these artifacts. It's a matter of tuning into the frequencies that are being emitted. So it probably has more to do with the technologies than anything else. Everything else ends up being a cover story. Of course, they can say, well, we put this up there so you have better cell phone service. Cell phone service has always been atrocious, and I don't see it ever getting to be good. You know, do you have enough bars? You know. Can you hear me now?
Right.
You know, that's quite ridiculous when you consider what the technology does and how much it costs.
Yeah, yeah, it's just an amazing evolution, too, of science, you know, done I remember the old bricks that thought we were so stylish, getting those cumbersome things to be used in our limited networks in cars and in the big cities. But now, how the technology has evolved to these GPS systems, and oh my goodness, yeah, we're just the technology spikes are amazing.
Well, yeah, and we need to consider, you know, what GPS is fitted to do that they haven't told us about.
Right.
You know, much like high-definition television. And you've written about the sound of silence and how these technologies are being used, and we could certainly do a show on that. Maybe we'll do one this month. What do you say?
Let's do it. We've got lots to talk about then. Yes, indeed. One of my most incredible topics. I think it's just very, very important to let people know what the patents have proven is not beyond the realm of possibility. Okay, most definitely are likely being utilized now as we speak, and on the HDTV digital signals.
Yes. Well, true, we're about out of time. I know the last time you were on the show, I had suggested that maybe we talk about some things that people can do for building up their immune system.
Oh, yes, indeed. Mm-hmm.
I think that would also be a really interesting show to do. I haven't met anyone that's gotten a swine flu. Okay, I don't know anyone that's gotten the flu.
Mm-hmm.
They also haven't gotten shots. And
there you go.
You know, we want to keep letting people know that despite the bombardment of fear tactics to coerce people into doing this under the pretense of protecting themselves, to discourage them from getting any kind of a shot.
Yep. Well, that's what we can do. Let's do that. Do that definitely next week. Then we'll have it a health and wellness structure. Okay.
Okay. Very good. Well, I thank you for being on the show, and I want to encourage folks to listen to your 2-hour show every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday at republicbroadcasting.org. Your show is called "The Story Behind the Story," and boy. There are multiple stories behind the story.
There are that. That rabbit hole just keeps spiraling and spiraling.
I know. I've got to get a new wetsuit, too. I worn this one out.
Well, thanks so much for your work and effort, Don. It's great to be in contact with you, and your breakthroughs are constantly amazing me personally, so keep it up.
I'm going to keep them coming. And by the way, you have greetings from our friends from beyond, and everyone's admiring your work.
Oh, that's nice to know. We need some help somewhere from whatever corner. This is an incredible period of time we're facing right now, and the Georgia Guidestones are talking about the importance of having everything in place for the year 2012 and mm-hmm. the entering of their new age, the age of 500 million Americans and our people on the planet. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, God bless you, Don, and we'll be talking to you next week.
Okay, and check your email, too.
Absolutely. We'll be in touch. Thanks so much.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
All right. You have a good night.
Yeah, good night, Don.
Folks, you've been listening to Evident Footprints on bbsradio.com, and our special guest, Dr. A. Tuat. He will be with us next Monday. And you heard it. We're going to be talking about some health issues and Lord knows what else. But certainly, possibly, we'll touch upon this issue of the sound of silence and what's really going on with high-definition television. And clarity of picture is not what your government representatives have in your best interest. Think about it. It just doesn't make sense. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network for carrying this show, whether live or in an archive. And we want to welcome the new stations that joined us there in Australia, as well as those listening throughout the former Soviet Union, now Russia and in the Ukraine and some other countries, throughout Europe, Great Britain, Central and South America. We want to say hello to all the folks in the U.S. military who are listening in. Kudos to you for your work and your courage. And we wish you a safe return back home. And also, I want to let everyone know that tomorrow evening, Ingrid Castle, the publisher, editor, and the widow of my former boss at the Idaho Observer, Don Harkins, will be with us tomorrow night. Ingrid Castle. You don't want to miss that show. Also, I'd like to thank blogtalkradio.com for carrying Evident Footprints, Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, Seth Hendrick on the sound, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. I'll see you again tomorrow night. In the meantime, I wish you a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.